Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Conference Committee. Want to welcome all of the members and go through the agenda for today. My name is Frank Hornstein. I chair the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division. I'm very pleased to be co-convening this meeting with my friend Senator Newman. Senator Newman and I have gotten to know each other very well this year. We have an excellent working relationship, and while our bills are very different, we will be conducting this committee with civility and inclusiveness, and we really appreciate everybody's participation. But in that spirit of civility, we will get through a lot of work that our committee needs to do between now and next week. Just wanted to go through the agenda. We're going to start with introductions of our various conferees, and if people want to make some extremely brief opening statements, that would be fine as well. And then we will do side-by-sides limited to the budget aspects of this bill, and then we will have some limited public testimony. I've invited several transportation stakeholders to talk about road and bridge needs. And before we start our introductions, wanted to make a couple of announcements before I forget. We will be meeting in this room, 200 State Office Building, for the duration of the conference committee, so you know where to go. A little home field advantage, right, Representative Torkelson? We will be meeting next at 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning. There'll be no committee meeting tomorrow, but we'll be meeting at 11 on Wednesday, and then, of course, we'll do our best tomorrow to set the times for the remainder of the week. And again, Senator Newman and I have already been meeting and creating agendas together and laying out what we'd like to get done for the week. So with that, I will turn it over to my Senate counterpart, and then we'll go around to the Senate first and then come back over for House member introductions. Welcome, everybody.
Chairman Hornstein, thank you very much. My name is Scott Newman. I'm the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, and I do want to emphasize the working relationship that Chairman Hornstein and I have forged over the last couple of months. We've had some successes, and we are going to try and build on that. And I do want to emphasize our desire that there will be in this committee civility and courtesy in addressing the matters at hand. And I say that principally because, as Chairman Hornstein stated, our bills are really quite different. And I think it's absolutely appropriate that we have a fair and open discussion about it, but we have to do it in a manner that is courteous to both sides. With that, we can continue the introductions on the Senate side.
David? We'd certainly like staff to introduce themselves as well.
David Larson, Senate CA.
Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel.
Krista Boyd, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Sam Zender, Committee Legislative Assistant for Senator Newman.
I'm Scott Dibble, State Senator from Senate District 61, Southwest, South and Downtown, Minneapolis, and I'm the DFL Minority Lead on the State Senate Transportation Committee. And a little foggy today. I'll try to come with my own Kleenex.
Don't make this.
Trying to, like, keep it all contained right here.
Yeah. Dan Hall, Senator from Burnsville, Savage, Lakeville area.
John Osinski, Senate, Vice Chair of Transportation, Faribault, Otana, Waseca District 24. And just also announced I'm also on E-12 at the same time down on, in the Room 5, so I'll be back and forth all day long. So,
Jason Rarick, Senator from Pine County, Kennebec County, Carlton County, and a little bit of St. Louis County.
Dave Frazier, Senate Researcher.
Ryan Majerus, Senate DFL Research.
Chelsea Axelson, House Research.
Jennifer Nelson, DFL Research. Paul Torkelson, 16B, all of Brown, most of Redwood, and a bit of Renville County. Republican lead.
Ruth Richardson, and I represent Invergrove Heights, Mendota Heights, Sunfish Lake, and a little bit of Egan.
Erin Cagle, District 37A. I have Blaine, southern half of Blaine, Coon Rapids, and Spring Lake Park.
Hello, everyone. Brad Tadke, District 55A, representing Shakopee, Jackson Township, and Louisville Township, and also vice chair of the Transportation Committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff.
Matt Burrows, the House Research Department.
John Howe, the Committee Administrator for the House.
So thank you very much, members and staff. And one final note, we will be ending approximately 3:25 today. Senator Newman and I have, and others have another meeting to attend. So we will do the budget side-by-sides first and then our limited public testimony. And so for about this first half hour or so, I will have Andrew Lee and Krista Boyd. Andy is from House Fiscal Staff. We'll start off and we'll go through the budget only related side-by-sides. Mr. Lee.
Chair and members, I'll be working off the committee tracking spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet that's on landscape format that looks like this. Just to orient members to the spreadsheet, at the top you'll see letters for the columns. Column A is the description of what's funded in Article 1 in the appropriations article. Column B shows the fund. Column C shows the current biennium, 18-19. Then columns D through H are the governor's revised budget recommendations. Columns I through O are the House. And column P through V are the Senate. I'll just go through the change items. So starting on line 17, there's an appropriation on the House side for an increase in the aeronautics-based budget for airport development and assistance. And then on lines 25 through 27 are a number of House and Governor provisions for aeronautics support and services base increases. And then there is a change in one of the appropriations that's carried in the Governor's recommendation and in the House that you can see on line 27 and 37 that would move part of an appropriation from a previous budget bill into the appropriation starting on line 21. The Senate does not have similar provision. Then going on to lines 45 through 47, these are changes in Greater Minnesota Transit Assistance. One note, this is on line 47. This is the first of a number of places on the spreadsheet where it notes a statutory change. This is not an appropriation that's made in Article 1. This is just to sort of illustrate a change that is happening based off of other changes in the bill. Then on line 56, there is a change item on the House side that's a one-time increase for safe routes to school on column J for fiscal 2020. Moving on to the next page, for active transportation, there is a House one-time appropriation out of the general fund on line 63, and then the Senate has an appropriation on line 64. Ms. Boyd wants to explain that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Line 64, there's a $5 million one-time appropriation to the from active transportation account in the special revenue fund. This is filled with federal fund revenue for the federal Transportation Alternatives Program. That money is transferred in the Senate bill to the Active Transportation Account and then appropriated to the Commissioner for bike and ped and trail grants under that program.
And then, Mr. Chair, continuing on to passenger rail, on the governor's side, there is a consolidation of this appropriation into the freight appropriation below, starting on line 67. And that looks the same as the Senate, but the Senate eliminates the appropriation rather than moves it to freight. Then there's a number of House or one identical provision on line
79. This is a carry forward for a previous appropriation for port development assistance specific to the city of Winona. That's canceling $160,000 that has yet to be spent in fiscal 2019 that you can see on column I on the House side and column P on the Senate side, and then appropriating that in 2020. Then there are, starting on line 80, there's a number of changes throughout the MnDOT section that are operational increases, and this is the operational increase for freight. Then on line 83, you can see another statutory change that is the same as the governor's that's carried in the House. Moving on to state roads, starting on line 95, there's a number of House and governor provisions that increase the base for operations and maintenance, and I should note that these are not specified in riders. They are simply change items in the governor's budget books that add up to an increase in the total appropriation for operations and maintenance. Then moving on to planning and research, there is a few house-only items on line 111 through 113. One is for highway corridor and bridge improvement studies of the general fund. One is for environment and climate report, also of the general fund. And one is an appropriation from the highway user tax distribution fund on line 113 for mileage-based users a fee study. Then moving on to program delivery, there's a number of House and governor change items. You can see operations increase on line 124. This is a number of appropriations increases that are specific to state roads that are sort of formula driven based off of an increase to trunk highway resources. And then you can see an increase in appropriation on the Senate side as well on line 142. Then moving on to state road construction, you can see a increase on line 133 that's similar to the program delivery increase. And then on line 134, there's a House or a Senate only provision. Then moving on to quarters of commerce, there's no change in the governor's and the House and an elimination of that appropriation of the Senate. And then moving on to debt service, there is on line 148, there's a slight forecast change in some debt service numbers on the House side that are slightly higher than they would have to be. This is the result of a forecasting change. That's in FY 2020 and 2021, and the tails numbers reflect an increase in trunk highway bond authorization in the House bill of about $2 billion. Then moving on to line 156, this is a governor and House only provision that increases state radio communications. And then for local roads, and again, this is driven by constitutional formula for the highway user tax distribution fund. So as resources are increased or decreased, that flows based off of constitutional percentages. So on line 171, you can see an increase for the county state aid highways. And there's some tax changes that occur on the Senate side that'll be explained later. And then on line 178 is the municipal state aid streets changes. Then moving on to other local roads, you can see a statutory appropriation for local bridges that's eliminated on line 188 for both the governor and the House. And this is related to the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And then on line 189 is a appropriation that's also related to the motor vehicle lease sales tax on the House side only that would move a piece of the receipts for the lease sales tax for small cities assistance. And you can see the Senate also funds small cities on line 190 out of the general fund. Then moving on to agency management, you can see change items from 206 to 211 are largely House and Senate. And like the operations and maintenance, several of these are not ridered but are explained as increases to get to an increase in the appropriation. Then moving on to buildings, there are a few positions that the House and the Governor are aligned on line 220 and 221. These are operational and base increases. And then there are two House-only provisions on line 222 and 223, one for electric vehicle infrastructure out of the general fund and one for electric vehicle infrastructure from a special revenue fund. And moving on to the Metropolitan Council, the governor and the House eliminate the previous appropriation for the Metropolitan Council and split the appropriation into two pieces, where the Senate keeps the same appropriation at a slightly smaller amount that you can see on line 251 is the reduction and the net on 253. So for the transit systems operation appropriation, you can see the governor and House have a number of change items. The core of the appropriation is on line 258, and then there is a statutory change that you can see on line 260 that does not factor into the totals, and then a also another statutory change that is a House-only provision for a metropolitan area sales tax, and this is the piece of that sales tax that is particular to transit operations and capital. And then you can see a number of one-time appropriations on the House side on line 262, 263, and 264. Then moving on to Metro Mobility, this is again similar to the governor's with a new established base that you can see on line 271. The difference between the House and the Senate is that since this base did not exist previously, the House simply puts into effect the governor's requested amount. And there's a note, or you can see on line 272, that there's a bit of an increase to what the Metropolitan Council was anticipating to receive from their current appropriation. Then moving on to the Department of Public Safety, you can see on line 289 and 290 two governor's recommendations that the House carries. And then on line 291, this is an elimination of an appropriation from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund that both the House and the Senate carry. Then moving on to the next change items, on line 307 is on the House only, is appropriation for soft body armor reimbursement, and this is particular to fiscal year 2019 that you can see in column I. And then on line 308 is a House and Senate provision for soft body armor reimbursement increases, and that would be ongoing starting in fiscal 2020. Then on lines 319 through 321 is an appropriation for application server migration, which the House funds on a one-time basis for the 2020-2021 biennium. And then a governor's recommendation increase on line 322 for technology cost increases. Moving on to the State Patrol, there's a number of House-only provisions, an increase to the patrolling highways appropriation that you can see on line 339 in a traffic stop study that you can see on line 340. Then the commercial vehicle enforcement, capital security increase, and DPS operational increases that you can see on line 350, 357, and 364. Then moving on to driver and vehicle services, these are a number of items that are in the House bill that are also governor's recommendations that you can see on line 377 to 379 that are from the Special Revenue Fund and from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Then moving on to driver services, you can see a House-only provision to increase driver staffing. That's also a governor's recommendation on line 389. And then on line 388 is a House-only provision relating to programming costs for resident driver licenses. That's in fiscal 19. That's related to FAST programming. You can see on column I. Then there is also is a statutory appropriation that you can see on line 401. This is a governor's, a House-only provision that would that you'll see in revenue items later, increase establish a technology fee and then use it to pay for Minlar's development and maintenance. Then the last change item under DPS is a house only provision on line 421 that is for one-time costs related to emergency contacts that you can see on column J. Moving on, there are a number of provisions in Minnesota Management and Budget in the Department of Revenue. The Minnesota Management and Budget appropriations is $10 million in fiscal 19 on the House side for Deputy Registrar reimbursement, and then a $50,000 appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund that you can see on line 433 for a State Patrol salary study. Then on line for the Department of Revenue on line 442 and 443, these are appropriations they're not appropriations, they're statutory appropriations that relate to tax interactions with increases in the motor fuels tax. So they're essentially kind of tied to that. And then there are some Senate-only provisions starting on line 447. I'll turn that over to Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, starting on line 450 and 451, these are appropriations to the Office of the Legislative Auditor from the General Fund. One time, the bill directs the Legislative Auditor to perform program audits of these two departments, and there's $200,000 appropriated to each in fiscal year 20 for those. Line 452 is related to language in the bill related to bulk data fees. These fees were enacted in 2014. However, the appropriation language to the OLA was vetoed, and that money has been accruing in that account ever since. So the language in the bill would allow the legislative auditor to access that money to perform audits of the bulk data program. You can see over the special revenue fund that's $981,020 and then approximately $200,000 every year thereafter. On line 459, this is an appropriation one time of $50,000 from the general fund to the Office of the State Auditor to perform the State Patrol salary survey that is in the House provision above in line 433.
And then, Mr. Chair, moving on to page 10, this shows a summary of revenue changes and transfers. So you can see, I won't go through every line, but you can see at the top on line 447, this is the increase in both the governor and the House side for the motor fuels tax. They're phased in slightly differently, so the numbers are a little bit different between the governor and the House. And then there's also a transfer out of the HUT that is related to the DNR piece of the motor fuels tax increase. You can see the motor vehicle registration tax increase on 479, and again, there is a difference in how that is raised between the governor and the House, so the numbers are slightly different. And then also similar between the governor and the House, there's a kind of a number of change items that you can see, pluses and negatives, and that's where general fund sales taxes that were going into the HUTD under the governor and the House, budget bills would be allocated back to the general fund. So you can see negatives to the HUTD and then positives to the general fund. And there's also reallocation of the motor vehicle lease sales tax that you can see starting on line 488 through 493. And then below that are a number of provisions, mostly in the policy articles of the bills. One common one in the State Airports Fund on line 495 is a governor's rec for state airplane service charges. And then going down, you can also see a few changes to the rail grade crossing safety. Then for the metro area sales tax under Metropolitan Council, you can see the governor's amount on line 502 and the House amount on line 503, and you'll see that this House amount is different from what was mentioned or what was shown above in the Metropolitan Council appropriation section. This is the entire tax, so half of that tax would be, and I think there'll be a little bit more discussion on this at a later hearing, would be allocated by the Transportation Advisory Board, and half would be by the Metropolitan Council. And so this is the total amount. And then there's a few changes related to the motor vehicle sales tax, and then a few changes relating to fee changes that are recommended by the governor and the House that you can see online, 507, 508, and 509. Going down to 511. And then a few changes with electric vehicle distribution starting online, 513, 514, and 515. Essentially, the governor's bill increases the rate and changes the distribution between the highway user tax distribution fund and a MPCA spending fund, whereas the House does not change the rate, but instead uses part of the fund for electric vehicle infrastructure. And then there are some Senate provisions starting on line 516 that I'll turn over to Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to step back to line 513. There's also a Senate side to the change in the electric vehicle surcharge. The Senate does have an increase in that surcharge, but all the revenue remains in the HUTDF. And then on line 516, this is an auto dealer provision. If a title transfer is not performed within a certain time period, there is a late fee charged by the department, and the provision would make auto dealers exempt from that. So there's a slight loss in revenue to the vehicle services operating account in the special revenue fund starting in fiscal year 21. The next line on 517 is a registration tax change for certain pickups if they are used as farm trucks, as defined in the farm truck section of registration tax, and that would lower the tax these pickups would have to pay, so there is a loss of approximately $2 million a year to the highway user tax distribution fund from that change. The next several lines starting on 519. This is a new vehicle surcharge for plug-in hybrid electrics, and that would raise $100,000 in fiscal year 20 and $300,000 in fiscal year 21 for the highway user tax distribution fund. And lastly, on line 520, there is a new tax in the bill on electric vehicle charging stations, and that would bring in $300,000 for the biennium, again, to the highway user tax distribution fund.
And then, Mr. Chair, the last few items on the revenue sheet show more tax interactions related to the governor's and House side. These are, again, particular to the motor fuel tax increase. And then the bottom few lines are, starting in line 527, are the constitutional allocation formula that shows the distribution between the highway user tax, or from the highway user tax distribution fund to the trunk highway fund, the county state aid fund, and the municipal state aid street fund. And I should note that the county state aid fund also includes the formula for the 5% set aside that goes to township roads, bridges, and turnbacks. Then on the last page, you can see totals for the revenue fund or the revenue changes at the top. And then this is a spreadsheet summarizing the general fund changes by agency. So this doesn't show any of the non-general fund funding components, but kind of gives you a summary of all the appropriations. With that, Mr. Chair, that's the spreadsheet.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee and Ms. Boyd as well, and thank you for your work throughout the session. It's been incredible. We really appreciate our amazing nonpartisan staff, especially this time of year. So, do members have questions of either of our fiscal analysts? We can take a few minutes for that. Anything was not clear, or you want to delve into this a little more deeply? Okay. Well, thank you again. And I think tentatively on Thursday we'll be doing much more in-depth, and maybe even start on Wednesday more in-depth on the side-by-sides as it relates to policy issues. What I'd like to do now, members, is to call on several folks to provide testimony. We are not asking for open mic here, but I have asked a few of our transportation partners to provide some testimony on their perspectives on the various bills before us and transportation needs, particularly in the road and bridge arena. On Wednesday, we plan to hear, again, some limited testimony specifically on transit. But today we're going to talk about roads and bridges. And our first testifier is our Commissioner of Transportation, Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you, Chair Newman.
If I may, Mr. Chair, can you give us some direction? Do you wish us to inquire of the testifiers when they are done or wait until all of them have been completed?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think that it would probably be helpful if once the testifiers here before us that you could ask questions once, for example, Commissioner Anderson Keller is finished, then we can ask questions of her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I apologize for interrupting.
No, not at all.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, no problem. So, members of the conference committee, I'm honored to be your first speaker today. I have great confidence in all of you that you are going to produce a result for the people of Minnesota that is outstanding and that is going to help us be able to plan for the future and be able to provide safer roads, the ability to move long-awaited projects off of our list, but also be able to improve our overall grade in the nation in terms of how our roads are doing right now. One thing I have heard from, I believe, every one of you is that you believe that transportation needs more funding. And I would say to you that we at MnDOT also would agree with you. We face a gap of approximately $6 billion. That's $6 billion over the next 10 years and $18 billion over the next 20 years. Minnesota has the fifth largest road system in the country, yet we spend approximately 15% less than the national average on transportation. At least 50% of our roads are 50 years old or older. And MnDOT has a list of 500 projects that it's shared with members of the legislature that could be accomplished under the governor and House plan. However, members, the Senate version of the bill, on the other hand, right now only singles out a single project that would move forward. And we believe that that would leave many Minnesotans by the roadside without their project being continued. I can assure you of one thing that I am certain of. The longer we wait to do this, the more expensive it will get. And I can quantify that in several ways. One is, if we rely entirely on capital investment, on the bonding process, which we have very little room left to go in the MnDOT 20% debt limit, for every time we do investment with bonding and don't pay for it, it's $1.50 that it costs a Minnesotan, whereas cash, a dollar. We also know that it's more expensive because we will do more temporary fixes on our roads and bridges that won't allow us to do full rehabilitation or full reengineering. Furthermore, the state is poised for more growth, 700,000 people in the coming years, as well as a 40% increase in freight transport on our roads, which has a heavy burden on us. The additional investments would include, in the House version, allow us to modernize our road system. And then there's the very important point that when we raise revenue in Minnesota in transportation, we actually revenue share it with counties, cities, and townships. And I know you're going to hear more for other partners, so I'm not going to talk a lot about this today. But for every dollar raised of the gas tax, 40 cents goes back out to those other partners in a revenue share. What does it mean for your constituents and Minnesotans across the state? It means there's less burden on the property tax for roads and bridges. Right now, in the last period of time, the percentage of burden on property taxes has gone from 20% up to 30%. And there's a lot of talk of tax fairness and ability to pay, but those senior citizens on a fixed income who purchased their home 30 years ago or 40 years ago do not have the ability to plan as well for those big property tax increases. For every penny of gasoline tax raised in the state of Minnesota, we bring in approximately $31 million. That's to say that not every state penny rate, every state that raises a penny of gas tax is equal. In Ohio, when they raise a penny of gas tax, they raise $66 million. So when Governor Mike DeWine signed the 10.5-cent gas tax increase into law, it's equivalent to a 20-cent increase here in Minnesota. In Wisconsin right now, for every penny raised, they raised $33 million. It's true of many of the states, and we certainly could have a good discussion about high gas tax states and where the money goes. Because of this fact, Minnesota has more roads than most states, and that's why we rank 40th when you compare fuel tax revenue per penny per lane mile. We rank 40th in the country. We are simply not dedicating enough dedicated revenue, to roads and bridges. According to the Society of Civil Engineers, and I just want to say again, I know that Representative Torkelson, Mr. Chair, loves it when I bring this out, but I have to share with you that this document is future-looking. This is about our capacity into the future. It is not only about today, but it's based on our current funding structure. You can change that. You can write a different story with this. We can raise the grade. We did with bridges when we invested in 2008. That's why bridges are at the average level, and it's why roads are at a D-plus level. We should not wait until problems become crisis. We can change the way that this goes. You have the power to change the way we fund our roads and bridges and how much we invest. One thing that you and everyone else are assured of is when we raise these dollars, they go to roads and bridges. That's per the Constitution, Article 14. It does not go to other places in the state budget. We believe that you can produce a piece of legislation through the conference committee process that will invest more in roads and bridges and transit and be able to help all Minnesotans into the future. I thank you very much for your time today and be happy to take a few questions if you have time.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Questions of the committee? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being with us, Commissioner, and thank you for recognizing the fact that the D-plus grade that the engineers have given us really is based on what they think is going to happen in Minnesota, not on the actual condition of our roads and highways. I believe your remarks prior to last week indicated that our roads are in D-plus condition, and, Commissioner, I think that speaks poorly of your department because I believe they've done a darn good job with the funds available as far as keeping our system in much better than D-plus condition. Now, the engineers, according to their grade, believe that there's no way we can continue to perform well, but I would hope we can do differently. But thank you, again, for recognizing that that D-plus is not a D-plus based on the current condition of our roads, but it's a D-plus based on the fact that the engineers think we're not going to get the money together.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Representative Torkelson, I think the civil engineers are clear that that grade in terms of what our roads and bridges can handle is based on current condition plus projected current funding levels. And the population as well as the issue of 40% more freight travel. I stand by the report that the civil engineers have given us, and I think that we all can say fairly that there has been a profound shift away from funding roads and bridges at a level that we need them to be funded at.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. In the report, it says, over the last decade, the percentage of highway miles considered to be in good condition and the remaining service life has increased for each highway category. In other words, gotten better for each highway category. Would you care to project what our grade would have been 10 years ago?
Mr. Anderson Keller.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I don't have a report from 10 years ago, so I cannot tell you what that grade was 10 years ago.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. Commissioner, you know they didn't issue a grade until this year. It's their first shot at it, and I would say they did a very poor job. Because they've indicated to Minnesotans that we've done a poor job with the funds that we've had available, and I just don't think that's the case. So I think we've done a good job. I, as you said earlier, I'm one of those that believes we should spend more on transportation. I don't disagree with that. But the way you've portrayed this report over the last several weeks to me is a misuse of some very sketchy information.
Thank you, Senator and Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein. Glad to see you again, Commissioner. We have had this conversation a number of times this year, and I always kind of look forward to the debate a little bit. You and I are in agreement that we have not or we do not have a sufficient amount of money in the funding stream. I think that our disagreement lies as to the source of the money. I agree with you that we cannot rely on bonding as the sole source. But I also believe that we cannot rely on the constitutionally dedicated funds also for just implementing and paying for our roads and bridges. I think we have to add to that mix general fund dollars, or we're never going to get there. Historically, we spend about 0.5% of our general fund on roads and bridges. 2 years ago, we added I believe it was $300 million to the mix and pushed that up to about 0.7%. And that is, in my estimation, an incredibly small amount of general fund money that we are spending on an infrastructure that is important to everybody, whether you drive a car or drive a delivery truck or not, because everybody relies on this transportation system. The only other thing I wanted to add to your testimony regarding the report card, you talked, I think, exclusively about the gas tax, and we do know that the governor's recommendation includes three other sources of funding, including the tab fees and the motor vehicle sales tax, while at the same time pulling out of HUTDF a significant amount of money and placing it into the general fund. I don't want to go by without missing that observation. But as to the gas tax alone, the information that I have is that the top five taxed states for purposes of gas tax, beginning with Pennsylvania, at 58.7 cents a gallon, and ending with New York at 45.7 cents per gallon, also all got a D in the report card from the Society of Civil Engineers on the status of their roads. On bridges, all of those states, the top five, got a C+, as did three of the lowest states. Minnesota, however, got a C rather than a C+. And all I'm trying to point out, Commissioner, is that the report from the Society of Civil Engineers has a greater story to tell than just the fact that at 28.6 cents per gallon, Minnesota sits right about 24th, 25th, 26th, right in there, right in the middle of all of the states in the nation regarding our gas tax. Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Newman. There's a lot there. And I, too, have appreciated our getting to know each other in this role. And thank you so much. We have had a
very good relationship, and I hope our debates are always friendly because I, you know, unfortunately, maybe for both of us, I think we enjoy debating a bit, right? So I do want to help with a couple of items here in what was said and talk a little bit about what Senator Newman said. There is a philosophical difference in the governor's proposal, the House proposal, and the Senate proposal. And if you would, members, and I will only do this once to you, how many of you were here serving in 2008 and 2009, members of the conference committee? Would you raise your hand if you were here as a member? Then, members, for those of you who weren't here, I would just like to share a brief story, and that is the story of being the Speaker of the House during the Great Recession, the greatest recession we've seen since the 1930s and 40s in terms of what happened economically to our country and to our state. And the experience that I had during that time was actually ended up doing some things in the state budget that I hope you never have to face. And one of the results of that time was that the leaders at the time, Governor Pawlenty, Senator Pogemiller, and myself, looked for every dime of general fund dollars that we could find to put into general fund purposes, especially K-12 education and health care, because we literally heard stories every day, and people came to the Capitol to tell us how they would not get their cancer treatment if they did not have health care. They came to tell us how there would be 40 to 45 students in their classroom if they did not get the funding. And I'm sorry to say, but roads and bridges are not as noisy as those other areas of advocacy. The general fund dollars mean a lot more in the general fund to those areas than they do in our transportation budget, and that's partly because of the Constitution. I thank you for the work that you did over the last few years, but there is a big difference in looking at those general fund dollars as the source for transportation. People feel quite strongly about this issue, and I don't want to belabor it, but I do want to tell you that story because it was still a difficult time and there were still cuts made. I would just say to you, if you ever have to be serving during a period like that, these general fund dollars will disappear quickly out of the budget. And I know that you have a solution for that with the constitutional amendment. I think we could debate whether that's a good idea or not. I have tended to be a little bit skeptical of that at this time in our economy. Chair Newman, Mr. Chair and Chair Newman, the other issue I'd like to talk about is the issue of this report. Clearly, this report has gotten all of your attention, and it is future-looking. So when you talk about the other states, again, they are doing a future projection on the grade. But what I'd also tell you is those highest gas tax states that you referenced, they don't have something that we have for the most part. Most of them do not dedicate exclusively to roads and bridges their gas tax. In the case of California, they spend much of their the gas tax in other areas. There may be even someone who has that data available today. But it's not that they are raising gas tax to go to their roads and bridges. And I think that, to me, that's a shame. Their constitutional framers did not dedicate their gas tax to roads and bridges. Ours did. And we should make sure that we uphold that. So when you talk about 48 cents or 58 cents, many of those states are actually spending that gas tax money on other items. They're not spending it on roads and bridges. And in our case, we have really a guarantee with the public that we will spend those dollars on roads and bridges.
Okay, thank you. So we have three more folks, and we'll cut it off at that point so we can get to some of our other testifiers. We have Representative Tabke and then Senators Jasinski and Rarick. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Keller.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are, I believe these are
sign in.
I believe these are questions for you.
Okay.
These are. All right, so first, thank you very much for being here. Thank you, senators, for coming over to the SOB to have this discussion and to get what I think is really, really important work done for Minnesotans. And so as we are going through and as Mr. Lee was going through the line items and where everyone's budget lines up, the thing that keeps coming back to me is, as you started your conversation, Commissioner Kelleher, is that the longer we wait, the more expensive it will get for taking care of our roads. And so I used to be the mayor of Shakopee, and we really invested a lot in roads. We also had a lot of property tax that went into investing in state roads system as well, which is always exceptionally frustrating because the state should be taking care of their own issues. And that's one major thing where I really believe that we have to do the work here to make sure that we're taking care of our property owners all throughout the state of Minnesota. And so as you talk about the $6 billion gap over 10 years and $18 billion gap over 20 years, what makes up that need? Like, where does that need come from? And how can us working on that need today influence the future of Minnesota roads, bridges, and transit?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Tabke, thank you. I think it's fair to say that what Governor Walz and in the House bill, it allows for the full completion of the Minnesota Department of Transportation's 10-year list. That list includes everything from safety upgrades to maintenance and repair of roads, but also key safety projects out there. The difference is in the Senate bill, unfortunately, and it is a fact, we will not be able to move those 500 projects ahead. We will be able to move our four-year program forward based on base budget funding. What happens is that the value of the money has been diminishing because of acceleration in costs. Everything from the cost of concrete to asphalt to steel to even labor costs with our private sector partners have begun to increase out of the period of our Great Recession. And so, therefore, a dollar spent today does not go as far as a dollar went back in 2010. And we can predict out that a dollar in 20 years is not going to go as far. It also means, Mr. Chair and Representative Tabke, that we do more short-term solutions and fixes to keep the road in a drivable condition when maybe that road should actually be totally renovated. It should go down to its base. It should have a new base put in because after 50 years, the base of these roads starts to break down. And so I would just share with you that all of these things are factors that will limit our ability to deliver more for Minnesotans and to be a good partner with local governments.
And very quick follow-up.
Very quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have a lot of projects that are happening across the state of Minnesota right now, like in Senator Hall, your district, the 35W Bridge, which is going to be – it's a massive, massive infrastructure investment that's getting done. And as the commissioner mentioned, that state of California, only 59% of the funds go actually to roads and bridge projects, as opposed to Minnesota, where we put 100% into. And so I think it's as we're comparing to other states and as we're looking at this gas tax and how it really impact our local need throughout the state of Minnesota, it's really important to understand that we don't use things the same way as other states do. And so there's a lot of different factors that are going into this, and so I'm excited to continue to work on that across the next week.
Thank you. Senator Jasinski is next.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and Commissioner Kelleher. And I just want to, I'll try and make it quick. Three things. Number one, this report, the civil engineer's report, I think that was very deceptive, to be honest. I mean, if Senator Senjum and I looked at that report, and if you looked at all the states and the different gas taxes and the ratings, I don't think there was anybody better than a D, to be honest, in any of those things. So it came across to the person that doesn't know that report and the details of that report really doesn't show a lot to the public. It is very deceptive, and I don't think you can have any correlation to the gas tax and the grade on that report. And I apologize, I didn't bring those notes from the meeting, but that was just my first thing. Secondly, on the gas tax, I know this, I don't want to spark all the debate on the gas tax right now, but and I've done the math on just myself, what that would do, not only the gas tax, but the motor vehicle sales tax and the license tabs. It's a huge increase on the lower to middle income people. Huge. The most regressive tax there is. And a lot of people don't, they look at those numbers, and I guess in my instance, I think for just the gas tax, it was about a $400 increase, almost double what I'm paying now, based on the gallons I used last year versus what it would be under the governor's proposal. I can probably afford that. But you look at that increase to a construction company, a trucking company, and all those things and what that those do, and those people are not going to absorb that cost. They're going to pass it on. So it automatically increases the price of almost every service or product we have across the state, almost every single one, because they're being transported one way or another. And that's another thing that's very concerning with the gas tax, the license tab, and increasing that. And then just finally, right now, we've put a lot of money into our roads and bridges in the last couple years. I have information from a lot of road construction companies. They are very busy right now. There's projects stacked up that are waiting to go. We have Highway 14 is just one example. Highway 23, Highway 252, I believe, is another one. So when these contractors are busy and they're bidding, their rates are going to go up. Anybody that's seen a bid process, if people are busy, they bid higher because they can't take on the work. So we're automatically increasing those prices by that. So, and again, I'm all about putting money into roads and bridges. As you well know, we've had that conversation. I've had that. But if you put a bunch of money in at one time, it's going to cost us more because those road contractors are going to increase their price because they have so much work right now. They're going to increase their price because they can't handle it all. But, you know, again, they're just some of the things to think about in the whole process of trying to get more money into our roads and bridges. So that's just kind of a couple points right now. So thank
Commissioner?
You.
Commissioner? Thank you, Senator.
So, Mr. Chair, briefly to Senator Jasinski's point of lower-income Minnesotans, the governor is concerned about that, and I know that you are all concerned about that, and that is why the governor and I believe the House in a corollary fashion puts more money into the working family credit to make sure that there is an offset of that gas tax, $100 for an individual head of household, $200 per family. And for most families, that takes care of more than 50% of that increase, and that goes forward, and it also has an inflationary factor on it, which the gas tax does not have an inflationary factor on it, as we well know. Mr. Chair, I'd also just like to say we're going to keep talking about gas tax. Let's talk about what happens in the state of Washington, where only 45% of that high gas tax is going to transportation-related purposes. Or in Hawaii, where because there are so few drivers in the state of Hawaii, I have never been there. I hope to get there sometime in my lifetime. The fuel tax makes up only a third of what they can pay for on their roadway system. So although they have a high gas tax, they have very few drivers. And in New York, the revenue there, and this should be a cautionary tale for all of us, the revenue there is really going mainly to repay debt on past investments in the road system. And again, in New York, only 45% of the households in the entire state of New York own a car. And so they there are other ways that they are accounting for their investment in transportation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Last question for the commissioner comes from Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the things we need to be clear on, I've seen a few times we hold up the Constitution book and we talk that 100% of the money is going to roads and bridges, and we need to be very clear that that's very loosely taken. I brought up in committee before that we use money to build a rest stop in Harris. And we pay a lot of salaries that the department has decided are going towards roads and bridges. I think a lot of Minnesotans in the discussion here makes people believe the money is all going to fix roads and bridges. It is not. So let's be very clear. This is, Chair Newman likes to refer to this as leakage. I just like to refer to it as poor decisions. We are taking a lot of money out of the HUTD fund and putting it into things other than fixing potholes and fixing our roads and fixing our bridges. If we make better decisions, we do not have to raise taxes. We need to make better decisions and spend our money more wisely. And I would also then like to ask, you know, we just brought up that to help low-income people, we're going to increase this tax credit. Is that going to be general fund money that's going to do that? Because I thought we weren't supposed to use general fund money to fund transportation.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Rarick, the delivery of planning a project for a road and a bridge takes a lot of people. And I will defend to the day I'm done doing this job and to the day I'm breathing the ability of the good and fine folks in the Department of Transportation to help you with road and bridge delivery. When you go into Target to buy something, you go and you pick it up off the shelf, you go through a scanner, maybe you do it yourself, maybe someone helps you today, but there are a lot of things that happen before you ever get to pick up that product and put it in that basket. It's a lot like that with roads and bridges. There are a lot of people who are engineers, civil engineers, in fact, other engineers, other planners, who help make sure that when you get on that bridge, it is built in a way that is going to be safe and secure for at least 40 years based on our history of what we're seeing today. But that road is going to be built at a standard that you and your family can be safe and secure. To say that we cannot spend money on the planning, preparation, and frankly, the employment of a private sector labor force that is enormous out there, because that's where the money goes. MnDOT does not build those roads and bridges, everyone. MnDOT maintains the roads and bridges. We plan the roads and bridges. It is private contractors, men and women, out there building these roads every single day. If what you are telling me, Senator Rarick, is you would like us to build our own labor force in MnDOT, we will have the largest state agency, because we will need 20,000 people to build those roads and bridges. We do it efficiently, effectively, and safely. The state Supreme Court decided long ago that those dollars to support the road and bridge system could be expended on the road and bridge system. That is why our friends in the state patrol have a bit of this funding. It's why we do supply under federal law for truckers' rest breaks, ways that truckers can safely pull off the road and sleep for a while at a place that's monitored, safe, secure. It is why the traveler does not have to pull off and go find that rest area somewhere else. It is an interaction between federal and state law, Senator Rarick, and the ability to deliver that is the highest priority at MnDOT in a safe and secure manner.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you.
Senator Rarick
was the last, but
you are the last.
I'm a little slow on the uptake here, and trying to be a loyal member of the Senate delegation, but Representative Torkelson got a little afield from the House, the prevailing House delegation. So I'll take the opportunity to. I don't necessarily need a response, but as long as we're setting out the four corners of our debate and our argument, one point that I don't think has yet been raised is the fact that there are significant hidden costs if we fail to act. The point was made of the direct costs, and you know we can look right at the spreadsheets and see, you know, what's being proposed to be raised and spent. But failure to invest in our transportation system, we know, has very real and direct hidden costs, as well as some external costs that are a little harder to measure. We of course are most familiar with the fact that, for example, the number of cars that hit the pothole under Portland Avenue, I think that the count was 19. Each of those individuals who owned those cars went to a fairly significant expense when their tires popped or their alignments and axles were knocked out of jigger. There's the real cost of congestion. Businesses pay, I think, estimated just in the metro area, an additional $300 million. And the price of goods and services is added. Because of congestion, there's individual costs of being stuck in traffic. 40 hours a year per individual is estimated by some. That has a real direct cost to individual family budgets.
the folks who have a lack of access to real jobs and opportunities. We have a job gap, an employment gap, and there are people who need those jobs and they're not getting those. That's a real loss of opportunity for folks, has real consequence on family budgets, and also causes employers to look elsewhere to fill jobs, other states. When we delay road repairs, and the commissioner talked about price of the delay of fixing a road, fix a road today, it's a lot less expensive than having a more expensive fix sometime in the future, both from real inflation as well as having to do a more extensive repair. If we're relying on debt, again, the commissioner talked about if we're relying on debt, which we seem to be very fond of, if we can't actually pay for things from the resources we have, we bond for those resources, and then we're paying debt service, of course. Recent popularity of earmarks causes our entire transportation program to be way, way more expensive because earmarks are very rarely geared and jiggered towards what can be, in a common sense fashion, laid out as a program of projects. It's just kind of what the prevailing whims are around this part of state government. There was this argument that somehow construction companies are going to start charging premiums if all of a sudden we're flush with cash. I think there's a different perspective on that, and that is if the firms, the construction firms, the contractors that we rely on are able to project out into the future exactly what they need to invest in terms of personnel, in terms of equipment, they can take on a program to expand their business and anticipate future program delivery and not have to suddenly try to bring on a bunch of equipment on very short order, not knowing if they are going to be able to amortize the debt that they take on for that equipment as well as expanding their personnel. And it evens out their ability to provide more common sense, logical, less expensive bids if they're looking at a long-term time horizon that rather than responding to sudden jumps in resources and sudden shrinkages in resources and the like. Some of the externalities are the additional costs of public health, additional costs to our degraded environment, and we also need to keep in mind the fact that we've lost a lot of our gas tax value, purchasing value, to inflation and to construction inflation, which outpaces regular inflation.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Commissioner. And
thanks, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate it, and I think we'll be in contact with you and continuing the conversation. So, members, we have five more guests. And I think what we'll do here is have them get through their testimony, and if those testifying could keep it to 3 minutes or under, that would be helpful. And then once they get through their testimony, then we can have questions if members have questions of our testifiers. And our first one, person on our list is Ann Finn from the League of Cities. Ms. Finn has been waiting patiently, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. The League is a statewide association representing 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities. I'd like to spend just a few minutes talking about the municipal street system. Municipal streets make up over 22,500 miles. That's about 16% of the roadways in Minnesota. This is mostly collectors and residential streets. The design and quality of city streets is significant to all users and is critical to local economies. Maintenance of this system is essential if cities are to maximize the investments that their property taxpayers are making. For every $1 spent on maintenance, $7 is saved in repairs, and that's the source of that information is the U.S. Department of Transportation. So the best time to do maintenance is when the pavement conditions are good. There are two parts of the city street system. There's the MSA, Municipal State Aid, and the non-municipal state aid system. As you likely know, municipal state aid comes from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, as provided in the Minnesota Constitution. This funds up to 20% of streets in cities with populations above 5,000. Currently, there are 148 of 853 cities that receive MSA. MSA roads make up 3,772 miles, and that's less than 16% of the total mileage of city streets. Additionally, many cities use their MSA in its entirety to
pay their local cost share of trunk highway and county projects, and that's the issue that Representative Tabke was talking about a little bit earlier. The other part of the city street system is the non-MSA system, and this makes up 84% of streets in cities. That it includes the street system in the 705 cities that do not receive municipal state aid, plus the non-MSA miles in MSA cities. The non-MSA city streets are funded with property taxes, local government aid, and special assessments. According to the Office of the State Auditor, in 2018, cities collectively budgeted more than $574 million, or nearly 15% of their total expenditures, for street maintenance and repair, and then another $297 million, or 5.5% of their expenditures, for street construction and improvements. And those are two different line items in the state auditor's reports. According to the latest number that we have is from the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee report that was released in 2012, which said that it will require an additional $400 million per year to preserve the system that we have. If revenues remain flat, city streets will continue to deteriorate. Cities will struggle to attract and retain businesses, and property taxpayers will shoulder the burden. The League of Minnesota Cities supports provisions that increase funding for the municipal state aid system, that provides permanent funding for the small cities assistance account in a meaningful amount. It has to be split between 705 cities. Funding for the city cost share of trunk highway and county projects, and bonding for grant programs that benefit local roads and bridges. Members, you just received a resolution that was passed by the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors. Additionally, more than 60 cities have passed that resolution, and it calls for increases in dedicated funding for state and local road and transit systems in greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. Thank you so much for the hard work you've been doing and will do in the coming days. The League of Minnesota Cities is prepared to support your efforts.
Thank you, Ms.
Thanks
Finn.
So much.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Ms. Jody Teich from the Association of Minnesota Counties. And again, I'd remind testifiers to keep it as brief as possible. Thank
good
you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jody Teich. I'm the Stearns County Engineer. Today I'm here on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties. We would like to say that while we appreciate the additional transportation funding that we've received in recent years, including the sales tax on auto parts, the lease motor vehicle sales tax, electrical vehicle surcharge, the local road improvement program, bridge bonding programs, there's still a significant funding shortfall in the county systems. Minnesota counties maintain 30,742 miles of county state aid highway. We also maintain about 14,141 miles of county road. The CASA system, as you know, is funded through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The county road system is funded with local revenues that include property taxes, wheelage tax, local option sales tax, federal funding, local road improvement program, etc. Some of those local options, like the wheelage tax or the local option transportation sales tax, work great for regional center counties, metro counties, not so great for some of the smaller rural counties. Most importantly, there's no funding for that county road system from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The reason I point that out is because that HUTDF is short for what we need. So we are spending those local revenues that should be spent on our county road system on our CASA system in an effort to keep up. Therefore, the county road system continues to fall behind. Anything that we can do to help our CASA system indirectly does help that county road system. So in identifying what that funding shortfall is, we started with the TFAC report from 2012. So that, in order to become economically competitive on the county system, which means the statewide 10-ton route system, system-wide safety improvements, elimination of deficient bridges, and strategic expansion. Obviously, not every county road needs to be four or six lanes, but strategic expansion where it's needed, where we have congestion issues. To address those needs, we are short, according to the TFAC report, about $450 million a year on the CASA system and an additional $450 million a year on the county road system. The TFAC report, when they identified these dollar amounts, said this is actually only about 52% of what is needed, but this is what we're going to list for the funding shortfall. County engineers can't just trust numbers from a report, so we took a look at our county state aid highway needs system to confirm or calibrate those numbers. And to just maintain the status quo and not become economically competitive, but to maintain that status quo, we need over about $750 million a year in funding on the CASA system and about $350 million a year on the county road system. And we are woefully short of that. When it comes to funding sources, AMC has always supported an all-of-the-above approach. Gas tax, tab fee increases, electrical vehicle surcharges, transportation-related general fund dollars, et cetera. Our main focus is that the solution should be comprehensive, sustainable, and include new revenue, which we need. 67 counties have adopted a resolution supporting this. So on behalf of AMC, I am urging this committee to find that compromise necessary to adequately fund county roads.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony. We have Mr. Han and then Mr. Smith and Mr. Miller. And again, we want to wrap up in about 6 or 7 minutes. So if everyone can keep it to a couple minutes, we'll be in good shape. And thank you very much for coming, Senator, and appreciate your work and the work of the townships. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do have a handout. I think Mr. Howe has copied that you may have in your packet, and that will summarize basically my testimony. And I appreciate this discussion, trying to lay out the outlines of the work that you all are doing. It's important work. And I know this is a preliminary meeting, and you're just kind of getting the lay of the land. And so my message is essentially this. Please don't forget about townships. Compared to some of the other numbers I've been hearing talked about around the table, the kind of dollars townships are looking at could easily be forgotten, and we're just urging you as a committee not to forget about townships. Townships maintain 55,000 road miles in the state. That's the most of any jurisdiction. It's about 39% of the total road miles. Almost all of that funding is generated by local property taxes in the townships. And let me remind the committee that the townships have been very frugal. The amount of spending that we've seen in the last 10 years for townships has gone up less than 5% in inflation-adjusted dollars, so they're being very efficient with the monies they receive. Now, they do get some state aid money from the Highway User Fund, and after it gets all filtered through the formula, it's about 2%. So 55,000 road miles, 39% of the state roads, 2% of the funding. Now, we don't think that 39% of the funding would be fair for townships, but we think it ought to be a little bit more than that, which is why we are asking for a $20 million increase annually to township roads. And this number was generated out of the study, the TFAC study that was done several years ago. So it's not just a number we pulled out of thin air, but it would be a significant amount of help to townships as they look at dealing with issues like increasing the weight limits on township roads that we see continually occurring, that there's a need and a desire to do that. But the wear and tear on township roads is significant, and having some additional funding from the state would be much appreciated. I think we know this is a tough issue for everybody. We appreciate the hard work. We are neutral with respect to how that funding is generated. We, as a township association, recognize that there's lots of different ways to fund transportation, and we are in favor of any combination of those ways of funding. We, as an association, we are a little sensitive about the gas tax increase because it goes to the Highway User Fund, which seems to have such a small percentage of that money ending up for townships. We think our members and township residents generally, the million people that live in townships in Minnesota, pay disproportionately a larger percentage of those gas taxes than maybe other residents do, but a very, very small percent ends up back in townships, which is why we've supported a couple of bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, Senator Lang's bill, Representative Wolgamott's bill, that would make a direct appropriation out of the general fund. But however you decide to do it, all we're asking is don't forget the townships. Even though we are asking for a relatively small amount of funding, we do represent a significant number of road miles and a significant number of people in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Appreciate your work, and thank you for your help.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and we will not forget the townships. Okay, our last couple testifiers, Mr. Smith and Mr. Miller. Welcome to the committee. We appreciate your presence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Joel Smith. I'm a council representative for Iona, Minnesota, North Dakota. We are Minnesota's infrastructure unit of more than 12,000 skilled construction laborers from five local units across Minnesota. We are your friends and your neighbors who build and maintain our roads, highways, bridges, and transit-related development. It is our time for our state lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats, from Metro and Greater Minnesota to come together and fix our roads and bridges to improve safety and create jobs. Minnesota's crumbling roads and deficient bridges are putting our safety at risk. 1,000 Minnesota bridges and hundreds of miles of roads are in poor condition. We have a choice. We can continue down the path of shortage, gridlock, and inaction, or we can come together and make an honest, long-term investment in 21st century transportation system for Minnesota's future. It is time to raise the gas tax and index the gas tax to inflation to make Minnesota's safer and ensure nothing like the I-35W bridge collapse happens again. It has been more than a decade since we raised the gas tax. The gas tax is the best way to pay for our roads and bridges because the Minnesota Constitution dedicates 100% of the gas tax to roads, highways, and bridges. The gas tax is fair because it's like a user fee. The people who drive on our roads and bridges pay for our roads and bridges. And 40% of the gas tax goes to local cities and counties. It should not require a bridge collapse to get politicians to come together and fix our roads and bridges. Minnesota's construction workers are ready to go to work. You have a choice. Please come together and get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last testifier is Bruce Miller from the Minnesota Farmers Union, and then members, we will adjourn. Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
The committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein, Chairman Newman. My name is Bruce Miller, and I'm here with Minnesota Farmers Union. We would like to offer strong Farmers Union support for a long-term sustainable transportation package that includes a responsible gas tax to pay for roads and bridges. As a grassroots organization, that is the position voted on by our membership. But I want to put a face on this, because so often we talk about immediately leap to the cost. We leap to the how many cents per gallon. I want to tell you about some of the people briefly who use those roads, because this is the important part. There's Richard and Bob, father, son, in Redwood County, who need to get their corn and beans to their local elevator. There's Eric up in Benton County, a hops farmer who gets his hops to the breweries all over the state of Minnesota. There's Katie down in Houston County. She's a cheesemaker who gets her product to the Lunds and Byerly stores in the Twin Cities. There's John in Blue Earth County, who's hauling his grain with his semi on Highway 169, a braver soul than I am. There's Pam down in Winona, who brings her food, her locally grown food, to Rochester and to the Twin Cities to farmers markets. There's Josh and Cindy in Kirkhoven out in Chippewa County, who deliver their pork and their beef to the Twin Cities, to customers, and to the grocery stores. There's Ann out in Big Stone County. You know the bump that goes into the Dakotas? She's about as far west as you can get out in Browns Valley. And she brings her products to the Twin Cities. Mark up in Carlton County, who takes his beef and his poultry to the processors at home again. Brian and Therese down in Watonwan County, who are hauling their grain to market as well. Brian up in Monoman County, who's getting his grain to market on these roads. He starts out every day on a township, a driveway to township road, to county road, to state road, to the I-94 corridor. That's a lot of roads he's traveling. And finally, Gary and his son Tom out in Reddenville County, who farm and use those roads to get their product to market, and actually have told me that they drive miles out of their way because there are roads that they simply don't want to drive on because of their condition. You know, our members believe that we have kicked this can of transportation funding down the road so far that we're afraid that can is going to fall into a pothole and not be seen again, ever. a friend of mine on my way, I told a friend I was coming over to testify at Flo down in South Minneapolis, and Flo said, drive carefully. I don't want you to drive into a pothole and not make it over there to testify today. I took her caution. I think most of you know that the first automobile didn't appear in Minnesota until 1895, and it showed up at a bicycle show in Minneapolis. In 1909, we had 7,065 autos registered, and in 2019, we have 4.9 million cars represented, and they're driving over a billion miles a year. You know, we're talking about Internet here. We've all been talking about Internet around here, the highway of the future. I just want to talk about, we need to continue to talk about the highways of today. Some of these roads, as you've heard the commissioner talk about, are old and older. I drove down a township road the other day. We're talking about townships. I hit frost heaves that were so bad that I wasn't sure I was going to get through with my all-wheel drive. And that township doesn't have the money for pavement. They don't have money for asphalt. They're going to go in with Class 5 again, and hopefully, and they're taking roads out. And that's out in Pope County, Minnesota. This last 2 weeks, while we've been in session here, I've been all over the state. I've been in St. Peter, out in Winthrop, down in Wilmer, up in Alexandria, down to New London, down to Cannon Falls. I have driven on virtually every kind of town, county, and state highway in the state. And I can tell you, from my own experience, the roads are in not great shape. Now we get here and we start talking immediately about gas tax. I just want to remind myself sometimes, and all of us in this room, that in January, gasoline was $2.10 a gallon. In Annandale, Minnesota, yesterday, Sunday, I paid $2.79 a gallon. That's a 69-cent a gallon increase, and not one penny of it went to fixing our roads and bridges. And when we go out on the road and we talk to our members, we're just in Winthrop, and the first question came up out of the audience, I want to talk about gas tax. And the point of it was, they didn't want to talk about the price of the gas tax. They just wanted to have their roads fixed. Or as this farmer said, I just want my damn roads fixed. And I think, and he was serious, because there's water all over, and he did want his damn foot. But I just want to remind people again that every agricultural product starts its trip on a local road, and the farmer ends up on that local road on the way home. And most of those roads, we believe, are in dire need of repair. As you move forward, and we will be here with you the whole steps as you do this, I just want to remind folks of one thing that we all know, and that's that the enemy of good is perfect. We stand ready to work with you on transportation funding that includes a responsible increase to the state's gas tax. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. Members, I don't think we left time for questions of these individual testifiers, but if you have them, you can send them to Mr. Howe, and we will get an answer for you. With that, members, we are adjourned until 11 o'clock on Wednesday in this room. Thanks to all the testifiers. Thanks for the members.